Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalashki, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booker County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers interview for Saturday, January 15th, 2005, and our special honored guest is Red Elk once again. Grandfather Red Elk, how are you?
I'm fine, and I've got a question.
What's that?
That Booger County, is that true? And
yep.
Where does it originate from?
Well,
or are you afraid to say?
No, it's okay. Booker County is a group of counties in southern Missouri, and even, I mean, there's nothing really official about, you know, what counties there are. They're basically south central part of the Ozarks, and they are Douglas County, the county to the south of Texas County, which I live in, is the most rural county in Missouri. They have the fewest roads. They don't even have a stoplight. There's no stoplights. There's very few police. There's It's always been the most mysterious area. Douglas County's always been the most mysterious area, and surrounded by several other counties. I don't think the whites really know what Booger County means, but I think to them, it's the mysterious. It's where you see strange lights in the woods.
Well, that's fine and good, but where did that one name derive from? That is one heck of a name.
Well, the Cherokee has something called a Booger Dance. And the Booger Mask...
you're talking more or less about the Boogeyman.
No, it's Booger. It's.
I know, maybe that's what they call it, but inferring Boogeyman?
It might be a combination of both, but the years ago, after the white people got here, back at that time, the kind of white people that were coming here very, very early on, they were kind of the dregs of, a lot of them were people that were sentenced to come over here, and or they were just not real well behaved. They didn't smell very good, and a lot of them didn't act very good, so the origin of the Booger Dance was that the Booger Mask was put on in the I've been to a stomp dance, and basically they instruct the young men to do everything they can to show all kinds of bad behaviors. And
picking of the nose and so forth.
Yeah, it's to show. It's not just that. It's a lesson to show Cherokee children how not to act.
Well, okay, thank you.
That's what a Booger Dance is. And they'll do all kinds of things that are suggestive, and they'll use foul language. And it's the only time, it was basically a way to introduce Cherokee children at the stomp dances, which actually were a religious service, into saying, hey, this is the kind of behavior you're going to see. It might seem funny right now, but this is not what we want, the kind of behavior we want you to do. But that
you've got an honorable background.
Well, this area my teacher John Red Hat Duke was born here. The old settler Cherokees started coming over here in the late 1700s when it was still Louisiana. But it was still French territory before the Louisiana Purchase. And some came actually when it was controlled by Spain, but they were the most traditional Cherokees started filtering out of the Southwest, or the Southeast rather, about 1720 after the signing of the first treaty at Holston. And, some of them went to Mexico, and then another group came over in the 1790s. The Chickamaugas came over. Then the Catua people, which was kind of the religious general authority type people, came around that kind of time, that time, and continued to come all through the removal era up until, the late 1830s. And, the largest part of the tribe, the other two-thirds of the Cherokees that were still within the confines of the United States, didn't come till the Trail of Tears. So they outnumbered 2-1 the people that came here before the Trail of Tears in late 1830s. And so they illegally deposed the chiefs that were already here and the traditional government that was already set up here, set up their shop, and started calling the political shots from that point forward, and they're the ones that are basically in control in Tahlequah today. But there's a lot of, there's still a lot of Cherokees that were outlawed by Chief John Ross, who was chief all through the 1830s, 40s, 50s, up to 1866. Chief John Ross had himself abducted by the Union Army along with the the Treasury, and it was really sad. Once they got out here in the late 1830s, it took Chief John Ross to kind of diddle around for 16 years before he actually got the money that was owed, and we had people starving here. A lot of people really think a lot of Chief John Ross. He was a 1/8 Cherokee, and he had all the full blood that walked the Trail of Tears, you know, behind him politically. But the traditional people came out here first, and a lot of people don't realize this. And so as a result, a lot of the people that came out here before the Trail of Tears refused to sign the rolls at Tahlequah after the Trail of Tears, and they do not have Cherokee Nation citizenship. Among them, many, many, many full bloods, many Kituwa Society members. They don't want any recognition. They don't want the services. They don't like the people in Tahlequah. But it, you know, it's a mixed bag. Times are changing, but they'll probably never be enrolled. There's a lot of full bloods that receive absolutely no help at all, or educational benefits, or anything. But the ones that stayed in Arkansas, and so there was a Cherokee reservation in Arkansas from 1817 to 1838, and it's been scientifically proven by Dr. Tim Ross at University of Arizona, who is a mixed blood Cherokee, that this was the original homeland of the Cherokees after they invaded from the South or Central America or wherever it was that they came from. You know, we know our wampum belts are tied with Mexican seaweed, and we know we came up from Mexico. But the Ozarks was the jumping off place after the second invasion, and we moved from here into the southeast. And then when the whites had encroached, this is where we came back to, because it was a very stark. You know, it's a high plateau, you know, over 1,000 feet. It's mountainous. These are the kind of areas the Cherokees stick to, where there's the game and the water and so forth. So it's the kind of the deepest, darkest area of North America. Other, you know, we came here to get away from white people. So that's
Jimmy. Isn't this the area where the giant real spirit snake is in one of the caves up there? Do you know anything about the spirit snake?
That's supposed to be in in North Carolina.
Oh, okay, down in your general area then.
Right, the serpent is in caves in North Carolina, but there are other sacred areas here in this.
Well, your area, if I know a little bit about it, there's tunnels and caves.
Oh yeah, it's very, very a lot of caves. They believe the cave system in Missouri is connected with the cave system on the other side of the Mississippi River.
In short, it's
Mammoth cave system.
In the long run, all around the earth, it's protector of some of the things that I know. Caves that are literally caved in and useless now. You can't go through. But not just caves, but tunnels, really, more tunnels than caves.
Yeah.
They literally go into Europe and Russia and all that. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, you know,
we're answering on Booger County. I think that maybe, you know, I just am polite enough to ask, and nobody else would. And certainly they wondered. So maybe that's helped us all.
I've explained a little bit in the past, but I didn't go into quite that much detail.
Aye.
But I guess there have been some that have been making some predictions for 2005, and I know you're not allowed or you're never really told.
I've never given a date.
Right. But you couldn't help but put it.
I've told a lot of things, but I've never given a time.
Well, you couldn't help but
only one time was I told a time, and I wasn't told by the Creator. I was told by the Mount Si here over by Issaquah, Washington State. And it told me that it would blow up in about 2.5 or 3 years, if I remember. Yeah, 2.5 to 3 years. So right now it's down to about 1.5 or 1 year. But that, again, was not the Creator that told me, but I was standing there talking with the mountain itself, and it told me.
Well,
so I don't know if it's going to blow or not, because what the Creator tells me always happens, but no time given.
Well, the U.S. Geological Survey today issued an earthquake warning for the northern part of the Ring of Fire. You know, they're talking about, you know, a possibility of a high 7, or even possibly, if it's underwater, an 8.0 earthquake. The Mayan elders of Guatemala are begging everybody to get together and pray Tuesday night at their local sunset, because they said that they feel that, looking at the Mayan calendar, that would be the time to pray, because they said that there is going to be if you didn't like what happened in Southeast Asia, you know, it's a possibility that the same thing could happen when it could affect 5 continents. And they feel like Tuesday night at sunset, your local time, would be the time to observe prayer and be in unity with them, because they feel that...
This Tuesday night?
This coming Tuesday night, the 18th.
You know, in a sense, I wish... You know, it's good, but we have our different timelines, not just around America, but all over the earth. And I sort of kind of wish everybody would get up at a designated time so that all the timelines and the prayers meet at... I mean, some people have to get up awful darn early, and some people might even have to take off of work to pray. But, well, I suppose it would work if one timeline prays and then the next, and...
You got somebody praying for 24 hours, basically.
Yeah. I would like to comment. I just, early this week, I think, did a another interview with franklyspeaking.com. And I'm going to share with your listeners much of what I shared there, plus, believe me, plus. One thing I like to practice, yeah, no dang commercials. Every 6 or 7 minutes, good Lord. But nevertheless, I will be duplicating what I shared there, because many people don't listen to that. So, but anyway, that's just on me. I was asked about it, and Frank said, wasn't that the wrath of God? And I said, no, that's the love of God. And let me explain that, because it is true. It's the love of the Creator for all His children. And we all are going to die sometime. You know, the rapture, which is not the word used in Scripture, but the ascension. There will be people taken up alive, as Christ did, and as prophets did in the Old Testament. But most of us are just going to, you know, if you get up there, we're going to have to die here first. And we're not given a guarantee of how long we're going to live. You know, many are not even born alive, but there's no guarantee. And so what he did is take people, a large group, and it seems so horrible, so sad, so bad. But what he did is call them a rotten apple and a bushel of apples. They weren't all bad. They aren't any more rotten than you and I are. But nevertheless.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from WiseFoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water. and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
And he allowed that tsunami and the earthquake that caused it to wipe out all of these people in one big go. And basically what he was doing is pulling out a rotten apple out of a bush and saying, "Now, I have saved you from rotting quickly. Will you listen? Look what happens if you don't pay attention to me, if you don't honor me, and honor me not just through words, but honor me through your mind. And will the people listen?" I doubt it, but nevertheless, he's trying all he can to get our attention. And those people, yes, they died in one fell swoop, but they're all in now. They won't have to go through it. They were going to die anyway. You know, but he took them as a rotten apple, as the great gardener he is. And then, as any good gardener, he puts it in the compost heap, and the apple continues rotting, and then he takes the seed, and he can work with those seeds and make something all over again, perfect again. And so these souls, these men, pardon me, so all these souls that are taken, they're safe. He does not want to lose one of his children. On the true day of judgment, those who are living and have lived their lives strictly for notice, hour, read, whatever, total self, those are the ones that have denied him completely. And they're going to be gone. But not dead, but gone. That is the true so-called hell. But it's not until that day. Meanwhile, these people are up there. Look, many of these people, they don't practice the so-called Christian religion. But they do practice trying to get to God in their cultural way. Many of them do. So, you know, God knows his name and he knows their heart. So he's got them up there. So don't worry about it. And don't think this is the wrath of God. This is the love of God showing the rest of the apple. Look what happened here. It can happen and will happen in various ways for you if you don't get yourself right in me. And the word sin means disobedience to God. The word repent means turn away. So you add turn away from sin, and it equals turn away from disobeying God. Thoughts are real. Real. If you don't believe it, you and I are both using telephones, you and I, my brother. And they didn't exist 150 years ago or so. But somebody thought that there might be a better way of getting in contact than a racing horse with a young man with saddlebags full of metal. And brought this into existence. Thoughts are real. They can become real. Cars are thoughts originally. Clothes are thoughts originally. Thoughts are real. And whatever you think, I'm talking to all the listeners, including myself, hear me. Whatever we think, maybe that would be better to say. If we're mad at somebody, it's a real anger. And it's a disobedience to the Creator who is love. So we've got to watch even our thoughts, as well as our actions and deeds. And thoughts are real. And there are so-called churches and groups of people, atheists and non-atheists alike, who feel that if they are good and put on a happy face and go through life, tra-la-la, that if there is such a thing as God, they got it made. But that's not true. God knows their heart. He knows every time they're trying to con him. Believe me, he knows. So be careful of what you think. Be careful of what you say. Be careful of how you say it.
Right. Well, I know you were telling me that the situation with your foot sure got your attention because in your great vision years ago, you were shown,
two crippled feet. So I got one more to go.
So what, I guess Gosoff was saying in the last, I guess it was Winfrey, or somebody was saying this, you know, prophecy is one thing, prediction is more seeing what's kind of obvious that's coming down the road, you know. What do you think we're looking at here in the next few years?
In this year itself?
The next year, two, three.
Being I'm never given time, but I'm given events, I think 05 will have a lot of surprises, but like the tsunami, and more earthquakes and volcanoes and some other things. But generally, this is my own opinion. Understand, it is my opinion. Not what I know, but my opinion. That doesn't mean I know it. It just means this is what I think. And I think 05, you better enjoy it while you got it, as bad as it is, because from there on in, hang on to your hat even tighter than you are now. Things are not going to be good. I was shown here about a week and a half ago now something that I thought, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I thought my imagination. It's in the inner Hayokas, I am a master at imaging. So my imagination is extremely high-tuned. And so I was laying here in bed just thinking on things of the Creator. It's very early in the morning, but I'd just gotten up and done with my prayer. So it was, certainly beyond 4:30 in the morning. And I just let my imagination roll. And suddenly I realized, my gosh, where is this coming from? And surely I could not, or even would not want to imagine what I was imagining. So why am I imagining it? And this has happened very rarely in my life. I'm 62. But it has happened, where my imagination is like a toggle switch that goes into something that is correspondent. It's like a toggle switch. And when I get this so far in my imagining, the toggle switch is switched. It's flipped up or whatever. And it rolled on with my imagination, but suddenly I realize this has got to be from the Creator. It's not anything that I even dream of imagining.
Mm-hmm.
And this was so scary that I no more of this yet. And yet it just kept rolling and rolling. And finally when it was done. And I said, oh, wow. You know, so I better check and find out if this is vision or what not. And I started praying about that. And about 4 or 5 days later, I got a letter from a lady, a Christian woman, who, not knowing of what I'd seen, was mentioning the things that, basically, the things that I had seen, of course, was in the Scripture. And, you know, kind of throwing Scripture in, which is my safety net. This is the way I check. And I thought, oh, gee, I here in trouble. It's, my 69 days in fast. Now, that was a fast using juices and vitamins. It did not mean it didn't mean that I just starved myself to death. Believe me, I used vitamins and juice. So therefore, I lived through. But that was so bad in that 3 day great vision that I've told your listeners before, I bawled and I begged God never to show it to me again, and dang if he didn't show it to me 3 times total. And that's terrible. But now I'm seeing this new thing about a week and a half ago.
Really?
Above and beyond what I've been showing. And I thought, oh, man, this is terrible. This is worse than I could even imagine. And what it was certain sections of our mother were standing still while the rest collapsed, imploded all around it. Certain sections of land masses stayed right all around the edges of it. It was like a America became much smaller. And anyway, it imploded. Literally, what happened was that the next layer down, we're on the top of number 6. Number 5, the roof literally caved in on many of these, many huge caves, many of the tunnels that you have, and just water just dashes into it.
So you're saying that the Earth's crust just fell right down into the magma.
Right. But oddly enough, some stayed, no, not into the magma. No, that's even deeper. But just into the next floor down.
Okay.
And literally some stayed. They were just stay and the rest collapsed. Suddenly I was showing the top of all these mountains and land masses that were safe. Didn't collapse. And what we think that, like Mount Everest or whatever, you go to the base of Mount Everest, right? And then you climb up it. What he showed me was on all the places that stayed up, they were not the base of the mountain or the plaza. Their base was even lower, down into number 5, 4, and 3. They extend way down, and those lower ones are not as affected as we on top.
Uh-huh.
Now, that giant hole up in the Antarctica.
Uh-huh.
All that is,
it's raining.
Eons ago, is one of these huge, monstrous caves that we have in Alamboo. That the top had caved in. Eons ago. And it's not easily seen. It's full of clouds. Basically, because the next layer below is closer to our core of our mother, there's a lot of heat. It's quite a bit warmer there than it is where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And the warmth colliding with our cold air, even on a warm day here, is still. And it creates this steam cloud type thing, so you don't see that very easily. But it's just a giant cave that the roof had fallen on in eons ago.
Makes sense.
I tell you the truth, do not believe a word I say. You just check it for yourself. Don't go blabbing off red upset. You check it and then say, this is what I know. This is what I checked on.
Well,
it's right.
Before you go any further, maybe, I don't know whether what I dreamed about last night has anything to do with what you've seen, but last night, there are two prophecies that come to mind. I don't necessarily want to let you know where these words came from, but I'm just going to lay them out there. There is a prophecy that does exist that says, upon my house it will begin, and from my house it shall go forth. Okay? The other one, I'm talking about the scourges in the latter days. The other thing is early this morning before I woke up, I dreamt of three words. It was kind of like a neon sign, but it was white and the letters were square block letters. And the words were first fruits in. First fruits in.
All right. Something
for you to think about. You know, the scripture talks about the first fruits. So I'm kind of wondering whether, you know, Spirit's telling me that this is the time of where he's beginning to, or creator, I don't want to say he, she, but creator's beginning to work on
it. Warn you to run into the Rotten Mountains. We call it the Rotten Mountains.
Yeah.
Is that what you're wondering?
No, I'm just wondering, you know, if this might be the beginning of the time where, beginning to work on his house, because, you know, where that earthquake happened and where the next one's forecast to happen at Borneo, you know, these are some of the most, true, there's a lot of people that practice Islam there, but, you know, Borneo.
I will not knock Islam. I would just knock this jazz and, you know, murder the infidels if they don't do what we say, you know.
But not to say it.
Their word Allah is simply their cultural name for God.
Yeah, that's right. But I was going to say that they're some of the most original indigenous tribal people in the world inhabit that archipelago known as Indonesia. So is he trying to tell if that's his house that he's beginning? That he really does look on those children as being his house, and are those some of the first fruits that he's taking and he's beginning with them?
I don't know. I cannot answer that question. Only time will tell what's going on. In some cases, that's the only way you can check on what you're shown or told.
Mm-hmm.
You just sit back and watch. And so I cannot comment, but I do know scriptures well enough to know, like in prior, just prior to Armageddon, over in Israel, many of the Israelites will flee into the mountains.
Yep.
Now, do a word study into and find out, does it mean just jumping into the mountains and hiding in the crevices, or does it mean into? Literally into caves with tunnels and goes deeper where you're safer. The Reader's Digest last month had a wonderful article about a small Jewish group that during World War II went into a mountain and hid during the whole war. Really fascinating. I didn't know about this. But they found a water source, a constant water source down there. They didn't have an easy time of it, but they survived the whole war around them. And it would behoove anyone to get last month's Reader's Digest and read that. It's really fascinating.
Interesting.
Now, we call these mountains rotten mountains. They're full of caves. Your area, that's why I'm curious, you know, about this mystic area of yours. It's full of small caves and stuff, and these caves do interconnect through tunnels and so forth, and you can get deeper and deeper and deeper, and you'd be amazed where you'll pop out in one of these huge caves that are maybe 100 or more miles across, a cave.
Well, you want to hear a story?
Mm.
A few years ago, there was a couple of experienced speedwalkers that went into a cave about 150 miles southeast of here. And it's known to be a very deep cave. They were down about 6,000 feet. They were way down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they came upon some humanoid creatures down there that were very hairy that started throwing large boulders at them, trying to drive them away.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Well, in truth, our Sasquatch know the tunnels and caves quite well.
Uh-huh.
And they also know stealth and invisibility. And they can pop into a cave that you walk right over that you just don't know about or right in front of. And they travel from place to place many times just through this system below.
Uh-huh. Well, the rest of the story...
That doesn't surprise me.
The rest of the story is they... apparently they were trying to drive them away... the speedwalkers are trying to keep them from a certain area because they did manage to continue on, and the Sasquatch left. I guess they figured the speedwalkers would not continue on, but they did continue on, and they said that they came to what looked like a glass tube right inside a cave wall, and they could look through the glass tube and see that tube was, you know, about the right size to perhaps be used for a conveyance. And they said that on the other side of the tube looked like buildings and a civilization.
Sure. Our inner Earth is just an amazing place. Absolutely amazing. And it's not a ball within a ball within a ball within a ball. It is a series of caves and tunnels. And the deeper, you know, run number 6, number 5 is the next level. There's a lot of caves, you say. And between going down even deeper into level 4, closer to the core, there's far less caves, not near as big, and tunnels connecting those. And those tunnels go down into the next one until eventually, literally, you can, if you're stupid enough, you can walk into number one level is our core. It's pretty hot. But the floor of number one is Lucifer's headquarters. The next floor, number two, is Lucifer's demonic burial area. Number three, a lot of those, that activity in the two below it, is crossover. There's good and bad there, because the demonic ones come up through that and on, but the higher you get, the less demonic activity that just emerges. And so we get bigger and bigger and bigger as the more we go out. Earth expands higher and higher, wider and wider, rounder and rounder. And, but anyway, it's an amazing place to go to. Just absolutely amazing place to go to. And I'm not the only medicine person that has ever gone there. Many medicine people know about what I'm talking about. But unlike the others, they keep their mouths shut. I'm ordered to tell these things. So I get the gum. You know, I really get the gum. That's all right. It's time that the people are Earth. Surface people, I'm sick. It's time that they start realizing this is, the world, our turtle mother, is far more complicated than they ever had an idea about. Now, on your spelunkers, it would be fine, it would be wonderful if you could trace that story down and find who these people are, or is it just a rumor, you know? Somebody's imagination put it out there. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
As far as I'm concerned, it's true. I know. Been there, seen that. You know, that type of thing. But the rest haven't. But until then, what I tell and what you say they told, that's just, just somebody saying something.
I know that when... When the Cherokee first got up here in North America, they said they noticed that there were gardens that were planted and obviously organized, but they were untended in the daytime, so they watched them. And they said that there were people that came out at night, very light-skinned people with large eyes, and they called them the Moon People. And they went to war against these people and killed as many of them as they possibly could.
Why, it's a shame, because they're not bad people.
Yeah, they just...
And the reason they came out at night is because in the next level below, you don't have the great sunlight we have. And it would blind them to come out in the daytime.
Yeah. That's why the white skin.
Mm-hmm. And the big eyes. And the moonish kind of look. You'd be surprised who's down there. What's down there? You'd be surprised what's up above us, too. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, what? So all this from Booker County. But given the time, I would like to share something. I'll share a lot if I can.
All the time you want.
Well, let's get off of what I talked to you about the ceremony coming up. Let's do something a little bit different.
Sure.
You know, in the scriptures, in the good book, it talks about Noah and the ark and all that. And I want the people to check this. Check it, if you can, in prayer or whatnot, just to find out if I'm telling the truth or lying. And I just don't accept what I'm saying, darn it. That's stupid. I can tell you anything, and you got maybe enough respect for me that it's true, and I don't want that. I can lie to you like anybody else. So I don't want you to just accept what I say. I want you to learn to pray in the Creator, and you'll be led to the truth if you're serious about it. But nevertheless, Noah and the Great Ark. It existed. It was true. But, amazingly, that scripture only basically is not all, but almost the whole, is about that hemisphere. There were, and still exist, two rivers of Euphrates, two places of paradise, you know, kind of an Adam and an Eve area. There was only one Adam and Eve, but there were two places like the one that you read about in Scripture. The other one is in North America, and they too had an ark, but they called it the Great Canoes, with an S, more than one. One of these great canoes had been found about 40 years ago or more.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I've got no reason to lie. It's in Cherokee land. And it's in Upper Canada. And man and son were hunting way up in the mountains. Suddenly the young man, quite a young man.
You mean Cree land? You mean it's in Cree land?
Yeah.
Oh, you said Cherokee, I'm sorry.
No, Cree. Anyway, suddenly the man dropped to his knees and began to cry. And his young son, I think he was about 14, ran up to his dad and said, "What's the matter?" And he said, "The stories are true. The stories are true." And he said, "What are you talking about, Dad?" And he said, "Look, the great canoe." And he looked, and there was a huge ark-like canoe in the side of this hill. And he saw it. He saw it himself. Now, the old man, the father, has died. This man is now in his high 70s. I talked with him a little bit, and I tell you the truth, this guy is not, he's not very communicative. Well, he doesn't want to talk to anybody, even other Indians of his own clan about this. I was hoping that he could at least take a map and say, "Well, you look around this area here, you know, and if you look good enough, you'll find it." But I'm afraid that didn't happen. But yes, it did happen. According to him, it did happen. Anyway, what I'm saying, there's rivers up there in Canada that you and I know by so-called Indian names and white names, you know, Yukon River and blah, blah, blah. But you don't understand what the word means in English. The Great Euphrates. You remember the three rivers of the garden? The name of the three rivers of the garden of Adam and Eve?
No.
Well, it talks about the scripture, and frankly, I don't remember all three of them. But in English, the names that you see on the map, Indian names that we know all of, like the Yukon River, in English, one of those names means the Euphrates. And the other one, all three of these main rivers, have the same identical English translation of the word, the English word. And up there in Canada, there are so few human beings, Indians and swine. Believe me, it's not like America at all. Not at all. Unless you get over towards the French area on the East Coast. There it's crowded. But there is a paradise up there. Those Indians have no trouble anywhere up there. Except on the lower part of the East Coast. Just walking out and pot shooting down a moose an occasional deer, bear, elk, and caribou, catching their fish. These people are still living much of the old ways. And it is a paradise yet up there. Except those damn mosquitoes. Sorry.
And the cold.
I miss mosquitoes on earth. I had thousands shaking my hand at once. But, the land is absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But again, two hemispheres. You're only getting the story of one.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're hearing stories of the other one. Like, for instance, Babel. Tower of Babel, I think it is. When all mankind was together and they decided to build a giant high-rise to go talk to God. And he saw that and didn't like their headiness. And what happened? Now, at the time, many different colors people. But they all spoke identical language. The one language. And he confounded them. He confused them with other languages. And what happened is you got 15 people that understood each other and 12,000 that couldn't understand them and they couldn't understand those 12,000. But out of those 12,000, maybe another 15 that understood each other, you know. So what happened is these people just what? Are they crazy? Let us 15 and run and see and find out who else talks our language. And that's what happened. Through language, they found each other. And to get away from the crazies, they walked throughout the continent, one land mass. Africa, Australia, Russia, North America, South America, at one time was all one land mass. Creeks and rivers that were, could get across was just part of it. But, you know, a giant island in a sense, the rest was all water. Well, once they were settled in to their areas, and the American Indians, they got to where we are at, North America. And Africans got to where the Africans were at. Chinese to where the Chinese are at, etc., etc. Once they were settled there, then the earth rolled. It split asunder. And literally, the continents broke apart and moved apart. And I guarantee you, don't believe me. I don't care. I don't want you to believe me. The continents pulled apart in this great earth-shaking event and settled where we now stand. It did not take millions of years to drift apart.
Wait, do you hear what the...
Listen, it took 10 months.
Well, that
and then another half month, up to 3 weeks, before it all kind of just settled down in its spot.
Yeah, well, that earthquake that just happened around Christmas time, I can't remember the figure. I think it was close to 100 feet, or 200 feet, I guess it was, that it moved Indonesia. It also created an underground, or a, an underwater mountain that a submarine ran into yesterday. Or they were going full speed ahead underwater. All of a sudden, boom! They run into an unmapped undersea mountain. Killed
it. It says unmapped. I do not believe that. I believe it was a mountain that everything fell down around it and made the mountain. But in a sense, unmapped, because our satellites and stuff can reach deep into the earth, let alone the ocean, and map everything. So that mountain, you know, all of a sudden there were certain depths that genuinely would have missed that mountain tip. But everything collapsed around it. And part of it might have rose up, including that mountain tip that they probably knew was there. But heck, they were safe. They may be 100 feet above the tip. But they weren't safe. It had rose up or whatnot. And bang, they hit it. And they said an unmapped mountain. Mapped, but not really. It actually mapped the mountain. They just thought it was a hillock until this event took place. Now, you watch the militaries, the big nations, Russia and so forth, the U.S., we're going to be darn busy right now, and we're probably in the process of it, of remapping the ocean floor through satellite systems, because things have changed drastically.
They got that iceberg, notice connected the dots, but, you know, that iceberg is headed toward McMurdo. It's in Antarctica. They've asked the Russians to go down there and rescue Americans. They're saying that an iceberg is headed for a glacier. Well, you know, tsunamis go 360 degrees. They didn't just head toward the north. They headed toward the south. So it's probably the tsunami that started that huge iceberg headed toward McMurdo.
You know, I should have.
Two of them get together, there's going to be fireworks too.
Well, it depends how hard they hit. If they want to kiss, all it will do is shake up things. But will they just kiss? Or is there going to be a headbutt?
Mm-hmm.
If it's a headbutt, it's going to be bad. But if it's a kiss, it's just a sweet little touch. But the only time will tell, and evidently, pretty quick time, too. But anyway, interesting things. Hear me. There are two hemispheres. The scripture is showing you only one.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
Of all the things Jewish angels, a white man with wings. We have angels on this side. And they are called totems. They're animals and birds and insects and whatnot, fish even. But they're angels in a way we know angels. So, you know, you're only getting one side, one version. By the way, there are 2 Indian Bibles. I'm talking about indigenous, not just the North American Indians, but Indians. Not of India, But the South American Indians, Islander Indians, you know, so on and so forth. There are two in existence. One is in, I used to remember the name of it, but the largest, sort of like the Smithsonian, but in England. And it's there. And the other one has just been found about 2.5 years ago, maybe a little longer, in New Zealand or Australia. Same dang book. And the English people don't know about this, and they probably hear about it now, but I'm not going to tell them like that. And it's written on papaya, and it's not written in words that the general populace understands. And it's much smaller than our Bible, much smaller. Because at the time of its writing, it was just the basics of the Old Testament, really, but not all the things that happened between the master flipping it and the master flipping before, when that Bible, these two Bibles that are in existence were written. Because that's, Nineveh and Israel and blah, 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 that's all happened since the last Thursday. But this is written prior to this, the last Earth book. And the Bible is much, much smaller. And the writing, I could understand just a little bit of it. It's pictorial. And it's very ancient writing. And I can understand it a little bit, which is a heck of a lot more than others understand. But it is in existence, and the caretakers of this are really worried about it deteriorating, and they asked, how do we keep it from deteriorating? And the only way I could think of was a short prayer. It was to take it to someone of sacred documents that know that paper does rot and disappear, and have them preserve this, but in so doing, they would bring it into the notice of the white world. They'd probably never see the dang book again.
Yeah, they control it, man.
Yeah.
He didn't just tell
me. Anyway, those two books still exist in my own possession here. I have a copy of the first and last book of the Bible. The first book, Genesis, and the last book in the New Testament. On a stick. It was a copy done by a lady who gave it to me of a similar stick. I think she said it was in stone. That had these little figures and all that. She sat there and copied it down. And the Smithsonian said that this is a medicine man's formula. My gosh, they don't know how to read. It has nothing to do with any medicine. It tells about the beginning of Earth's creation and the end of what's going to happen. And it's those two books alone. It's fascinating, and I can read it. But anyway, so now I would like to share about a sacred staff.
I heard the rumors about those. Go, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, let's run on that line. Go ahead.
I had heard. There are records. There's two Navajo fellows that in the 1930s went down to Mexico. And they traveled all throughout South and Central America back before the tunnels, the entrances were exploded, and before a lot of the archaeologists got to a lot of these places and overran them. But they were led to a group of Indians in the King Mountains in central Mexico called the Chicaragans.
I've heard of them.
And the Chicaragans, their leader spoke several dead languages and had a large library, but they said eventually they were adopted they were blindfolded and taken into the forest for 2 weeks, and they were allowed to view records on bark and on skins that had been hidden since the time of Cortez.
I can believe it. You know, the Indians, the indigenous people of the world, not just American, North American, Canada, USA, South America, Indian, with Africans and people in the Russian steppes and in Norway and so forth. We all have medicine people all over the world. They were given the sacred knowledge that you hear the Indians talk about, sacred this, sacred that. In many ways, well, certainly sacred, but in many ways, it's secret, what they say. And the reason they were given it in the first place is they were not the ones that ran to technology. They were staying pretty darn pure compared to the rest of the world. And they still stay fairly pure compared to everybody else. So this sacred, or if you, and I do, like to say a lot, is secret knowledge, was given to them to give to the world right now.
That's right.
But they are refusing to do it. There are a few brave souls that are doing so. But generally, the whole Indian people all over the world are keeping their mouths shut.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is because white man, an archaeologist, will go and grab this or do that, or a white man will destroy this or do that, or take claim for it or whatnot, and misuse it and abuse it all.
Well, but, you know,
and I can't blame them. Now, here, that's one reason.
The other reason,
hold on, please.
Okay, go ahead.
The other reason is because of the way the general so-called white, which is necessarily white alone, but the technology world, the technologist world, have treated the so-called savages so wrongly over the years and years ago, and still do, that they could, much as if they all go to, you know, go to hell, they could care less, so they're not going to tell. But in so doing, they are disobeying the Creator. They were given that knowledge. It was passed down from generations past to today. They were given that knowledge to give to the earth so all who are Matakliwash, one relation, we are all one relation, can fight. And they are refusing to do this. Thus, they are killing off the technologists and themselves and their children and their grandchildren just because of their pride, their anger, their hate. And, I'm sorry, but they're screwing up big time. And you'll find a lot of the Indian world here in North America and probably South. A lot of them, they're pissed off, baby. And sorry, you want to hold the sacred knowledge and make it so sacred that it's only you, red man, that's going to survive? It ain't going to happen.
Uh-oh. Well,
and it's time that the people rebel against their own people and say, yes, it is time for this knowledge to begin to end. There are a very few who are full-blooded Indians that are doing so and are ostracized by their own tribal people for doing so. I'm a half-breed. I look black. And I say half-breed, actually a little less than that, but nevertheless, it's my Indian blood that flows out. I can't help my look. But I'm the only one that I know of who is so public out of all of them. And I do know of two who are Shoshone who have started a little thing of their own, which is similar to what the Creator told me to do and what I'm doing. And, boy, I tell you, they are despised by most of their own Shoshone people.
Control.
And loved by a few. But, look, there's things that I know. I could, if it wasn't for the fact they sound so outlandish, I could get killed for what I say. Just as little as I've told. Not just today, but over a period of my radio life.
It's scary. It really
is. But it sounds so outlandish, who's going to believe an old man? And but unfortunately, as time progresses, a lot of what old Red Elk is saying is being seen. And more and more people are coming to realize maybe this old geezer is speaking truth. And eyes are cracking open. And the more that are opened up, the greater danger I am in. And I've already had many, many threats, from murder to beatings to whatnot. Many. And I have had a lot of satanic, sorcery thrown against me. But it still hasn't shut me up. But, and I know so much, I don't share with anybody except maybe two or three, maybe five. And most of them think I'm nuts too, but nevertheless.
Folks, you don't tell me enough.
Knowledge in me, get me killed in a heck of a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little scary because, there's nuts everywhere. But you're right, you know, Hunbuck's man made the comment, the major books that came out about the Mayan calendar, the Mayan prophecy, were written by white people that understood, less than 100 glyphs. And, they understand over 1,000. And, the books that were published tend to spread fear. Fear is meant to engender control. And, but on the other hand, there are red people that are playing the same game.
Right.
And for really worse reasons, because they're doing it for racist reasons, because they're still resenting the white people.
My white side, me, myself personally, I have not, to my knowledge, ever done anything wrong against the Indians, against their tradition. Certainly, I'm not following their tradition. The Inner Hioka follow only purity. Traditions began out of purity.
Right.
And I'm following purity, which is against tradition. But other than that, I've never gone out and shot an Indian. Maybe my great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandfather. But hell, I have nothing to do with that.
Right.
So why hold me responsible for something maybe one of my white ancestors did? And then again, I'm part Indian. Maybe some Indian, the actual story is that the Blackfoot raped one of my ancestors, and that's where that part of my blood came in. But I wasn't responsible as an Indian part of me for what that guy did. I'm responsible for me, for what I do. I have to face the Creator. So, why hold resentments against people, a whole civilization? Just because of what happened to your great-great-great-grandparents, and yes, today. But I tell you, today there are white people who are looked down upon and shunned and stuff as bad as an Indian is. Look at these so-called whistleblowers that turn in businesses for doing wrong. Good Lord, you think you Indians are the only ones that got problems? No.
Well,
it's time to take these sacred things. I got somebody calling in. I'll just let that go by.
The white buffaloes have been born and begun to die, and all these prophecies have been fulfilled. And the purpose of them was to get all of us to heal together. And there's a lot of Indians that do not get it, and the ones that are getting it are the mixed bloods like you and me, and literally hundreds and thousands, possibly millions of others. But there are so many voices out there beckoning to them, and they're confused, and some of them are even downright scared, and some are openly misled. It's a confusing situation. That's the reason why you and I say that people need to get this direct connection with Creator that's so important.
Well, the vast majority of Indians, North American tribal people, claim that they are connected with God. And I tell you true, they have a residue of connection to God. And the white people don't. But that does not mean the vast majority of them are truly connected to the Creator. They have a closer connection. They have a closer reality of what goes on. The trees can talk, etc., etc. And in my own time, talking with good-sized amounts of full bloods, I call them. I haven't met a full blood yet, not one, that has ever talked with a tree. But by the time I got done teaching them, they came back, wow, this really, you know, my grandmother, great-great-grandmother told, or great-grandmother, or grandmother told me this could be, but this is the first time I experienced it.
Uh-huh.
Even though I claim that it can be done.
Uh-huh.
I've never done it until you taught me, Fredo. And I said, now, go out and teach your people. It's time to get back to some reality here. And, well, I don't know if they ever did, or if they're hoarding all of that just to hoard it over the other Indians around them. See, I can talk to trees. You can't. I don't know. They're people are funny, not just Indians, but people. But anyway, now, to the staff that I started on this out. It's been about 6 years, maybe even a little longer, ago on the Atlantic coast in Canada. A man and a woman were walking in the evening in the dark moonlight along the beach of the Atlantic. And out at sea, they saw this light glowing and going upward like a flashlight underwater shining up. And these are Indians that, they live at the ocean. And they know phosphorus when they see phosphorus. But this is far more than phosphorus. So it caught their eye. And this glowing just kept slowly coming in on the waves. Until it got within walking distance. So the Indian man rolled up his pant legs and walked up to see what the heck is this. And there was a stick floating there giving off this great light. So he picked up the stick to look at it closely and brought it to shore to look at it with the woman. And it scared them because it had carvings and it was not waterlogged. So it scared them both. So he decided, let's throw it back in the ocean. Well, he grabbed the top of the stick and went to throw it on. But the bottom of the stick would go out first. You know. But before he let go of it, as he started his swing, the bottom pointed toward the ocean, and a great, not a vortex, what is that, a funnel, appeared where it was pointed, and the funnel got bigger and bigger, and it went down into the ocean, and on the base of the tunnel as it went down, you know, like a spinning,
whirlpool.
Anyway, there were,
A whirlpool?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
There were faces in the water, sticking out along the edge of that whirlpool, women's faces, of all the things, the Jewish angels, the white man with wings. We have angels on this side, and they are called totems. They're animals and birds and insects and whatnot, fish even. But they're angels, in a way we know angels. So, you know, you're only getting one side, one version. By the way, there are two Indian Bibles. You know, I'm talking about indigenous, not just the North American Indians, but Indians, not of India, but the South American Indians, Islander Indians, you know, so on and so forth. There are two in existence. One is in, I used to remember the name of it, but the largest, sort of like the Smithsonian, but in England. And it's there. And the other one had just been found about 2.5 years ago, maybe a little longer, in New Zealand or Australia. Same dang book. And the English people don't know about this, and they probably hear about it now, but I was going to tell them like that. And it's written on papaya, and it's not written in words that the general populace understands. And it's much smaller than our Bible, much smaller. Because at the time of its writing, it was just the basics of the Old Testament, really, but not all the things that happened between the last earth flipping the last earth flipping before, when that Bible, these two Bibles that are in existence were written. Because that's, Nineveh and Israel and blah, 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 that's all happened since the last earth flipping. But this was written prior to this, the last earth book. And the Bible is much, much smaller. And the writing, I could understand just a little bit of it. It's pictorial. And it's very ancient writing. And I can understand it a little bit, which is a heck of a lot more than others understand. But it is in existence, and the caretakers of this are really worried about it deteriorating. And they ask, how do we keep it from deteriorating? And the only way I could think of was short of prayer. It was to take it to someone of sacred documents that know that paper does rot and disappear, and have them preserve this. But in so doing, they would bring it into the notice of the white world. They'd probably never see the dang book again.
Yeah, they control it. Man.
Yeah.
He didn't just tell
them. Anyway, those two books still exist in my own possession here. I have a copy of the first and last book of the Bible. The first book, Genesis, and the last book in the New Testament, on a stick. It was a copy done by a lady who gave it to me of a similar stick. I think she said it was in stone, that had these little figures and all that. And she sat there and copied it down. And the Smithsonian said that this is the medicine man's formula. My gosh, they don't know how to read. It has nothing to do with any medicine. It tells about the beginning of Earth's creation and the end of what's going to happen. And it's those two books alone. It's fascinating, and I can read it. But anyway, so now, I would like to share about a sacred staff.
I heard the rumors about those. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, let's run on that line. Go ahead.
No, I had heard, there are records. There was two Navajo fellows that in the 1930s went down to Mexico. And they traveled all throughout South and Central America back before the tunnels, were the entrances were exploded, and before a lot of the archaeologists got to a lot of these places and overran them. But they were led to a group of Indians in the King Mountains in central Mexico called the Chicaragans.
I've heard of them.
And the Chicaragans, their leader spoke several dead languages and had a large library, but they said eventually they were adopted they said they were blindfolded and taken into the forest for 2 weeks, and they were allowed to view records on bark and on skins that had been hidden since the time of Cortez.
I can believe it. You know, the Indians, the indigenous people of the world, not just American, North American, Canada, USA, South America, Indian, but Africans and people in the Russian steppes and in Norway and so forth. We all have medicine people all over the world. They were given the sacred knowledge that you hear the Indians talk about, sacred that. In many ways, well, certainly sacred, but in many ways, it's secret, what they say. And the reason they were given it in the first place is they were not the ones that ran to technology. They were staying pretty darn pure compared to the rest of the world. And they still stayed fairly pure compared to everybody else. So this sacred, or if you, and I do, like to say a lot, is secret knowledge, was given to them to give to the world right now.
That's right.
But they are refusing to do it. There are a few brave souls that are doing so. But generally, the whole Indian all over the world are keeping their mouths shut.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is because white man and archaeologists will go and grab this and do that, or a white man will destroy this, or or do that, or take claim for it, or whatnot, and misuse it and abuse the knowledge.
Well, but, you know,
I can't blame them. Now, here's that's one reason. Hold on, please.
Okay, go ahead.
The other reason is because of the way the general so-called white, which doesn't necessarily mean white alone, but the technology world, the technologist world, have treated the so-called savages so wrongly over the years and years ago, and still do, that they could, if they all go to, you know, go to hell, they could care less, so they're not going to tell. But in so doing, they are disobeying the Creator. They were given that knowledge. It was passed down from generations past to today. They were given that knowledge to give to the earth so all who are Metakriwash, one relation, we are all one relation, can fight. And they are refusing to do this. Thus, they are killing off the technologists and themselves and their children and their grandchildren just because of their pride, their anger, their hate. And, I'm sorry, but they're screwing up big time. And you'll find a lot of the Indian world here in North America and probably South. A lot of them, they're piss off babies. I'm sorry. You want to hold the sacred knowledge and make it so sacred that it's only you, red man, that's going to survive? It ain't going to happen.
Uh-oh. Well,
and it's time that the people rebel against their own people and say, yes, it is time for this knowledge to begin to end. There are a very few who are full-blooded Indians that are doing so and are ostracized by their own tribal people for doing so. I'm a half-breed. I look white. And I say half-breed, actually a little less than that, but nevertheless, it's my Indian blood that flows out. I can't help my look. But I'm the only one that I know of who is so public out of all of them. And I do know of two who are Shoshone, who have started a little thing of their own, which is similar to what the Creator told me to do and what I'm doing. And boy, I tell you, they are despised by most of their own Shoshone people.
Control.
And loved by a few. But look, there's things that I know. I could, if it wasn't for the fact they sound so outlandish, I could get killed for what I say, just as little as I've told. Not just today, but over a period of my radio life.
It's scary. It really is.
But it sounds so outlandish. Who's going to believe an old man? And but unfortunately, as time progresses, a lot of what old Red Elk is saying is being seen. And more and more people are coming to realize maybe this old geezer is speaking truth. And eyes are cracking open. And the more that are opened up, the greater danger I am in. And I've already had many, many threats, from murder to beatings to whatnot. Many. And I have had a lot of satanic, sorcery thrown against me.
Uh-huh.
But it still hasn't shut me up. But, and I know so much, I don't share with anybody except maybe two or three, maybe five. And most of them think I'm nuts too, but nevertheless.
Well, you don't tell me enough.
Knowledge of me to get me killed in a heck of a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is a little scary because, there's nuts everywhere. But you're right, you know, Hunbuck's man made the comment, the major books that came out about the Mayan calendar, the Mayan prophecy, were written by white people that understood, less than 100 glyphs. And, they understand over 1,000. And, the books that were published tend to spread fear. fear is meant to engender control. And but on the other hand, there are red people that are playing the same game,
right.
and for really worse reasons, because they're doing it for racist reasons, because they're still resenting the white people. And this is
and I tell you, my white side, me, myself personally, I have not, to my knowledge, ever done anything wrong against the Indians, against their tradition. Certainly, I'm not following their tradition. The Inner Hioka follow only purity. Traditions began out of purity.
Right.
And I'm following purity, which is against tradition. But other than that, you know, I've never gone out and shot an Indian. Maybe my great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandfather. But hell, I have nothing to do with that.
Right.
You know, so why hold me responsible for something maybe one of my white ancestors did? And then again, I'm part Indian. Maybe some Indian, or, well, the actual story is that the Blackfoot raped one of my ancestors, and that's where that part of my blood came in. But I wasn't responsible as an Indian part of me for what that guy did. You know, I'm responsible for me, for what I do. I have to face the Creator. So, you know, I mean, why hold resentment against people, the whole civilization, just because of what happened to your great-great-great-grandparents, and yes, today. But I tell you, today there are white people who are looked down upon and shunned and stuff as bad as an Indian is. Look at these so-called whistleblowers.
Yeah.
That turn in businesses for doing wrong. Good Lord, you think you Indians are the only ones that got problems? No.
Well,
it's time to take these sacred things. Give. I got somebody calling in. I'll just let that go by.
But, well, you know, the white buffaloes have been born and, you know, begun to die, and all these prophecies have been fulfilled, and the purpose of them was to get all of us to heal together. And there's a lot of Indians that do not get it, and the ones that are getting it are the mixed bloods like you and me and literally hundreds and thousands, possibly millions of others. But there are so many voices out there beckoning to them, and you know, they're confused, and some of them are even downright scared, and some are openly misled. It's a confusing situation. That's the reason why you and I say that people need to get this direct connection with Creator that's so important.
Well, the vast majority of Indians, North American tribal people, claim that they are connected with God. And I tell you true, they have a residue of connection to God. And the white people don't. But that does not mean the vast majority of them are truly connected to the Creator. They have a closer connection. They have a closer reality of what goes on. The trees can talk, etc., etc. And in my own time, talking with good-sized amounts of full bloods, I call them, I haven't met a full blood yet, not one, that has ever talked with a tree. But by the time I got done teaching them, they came back. Wow, this really. You know, my grandmother, or great-great-grandmother told, or great-grandmother, or grandmother told me this could be, but this is the first time I experienced it.
Uh-huh.
Even though I claim that it can be done.
Uh-huh.
I've never done it until you taught me, Redo. And I said, now, go out and teach your people. It's time to get back to some reality here. And, well, I don't know if they ever did, or if they're hoarding all of that just to hoard it over the other Indians around them. Yeah, I can talk to trees. You can't. I don't know. They're people are funny, not just Indians, but people. But anyway, now, to the staff that I started all this out. It's been about 6 years, maybe even a little longer, ago on the Atlantic coast in Canada. A man and a woman were walking in the evening in the dark moonlight, along the beach of the Atlantic, and out at sea they saw this light glowing and going upward like a flashlight under water, shining up. And these are Indians that they live at the ocean, and they know phosphorus when they see phosphorus, but this is far more than phosphorus. So it caught their eye, and this glowing just kept slowly coming in on the waves until it got within walking distance. So the Indian man rolled up his pant legs and walked up to see what the heck is this. And there was a stick floating there, giving off this great light. So he picked up the stick to look at it closely and brought it to shore to look at it with the woman. And it scared them because it had carvings and it was not waterlogged. So it scared them both. So he decided, let's throw it back in the ocean. Well, he grabbed the top of the stick and went to throw it on, but the bottom of the stick would go out first. But before he let go of it, as he started his swing, the bottom pointed toward the ocean, and a great, not a vortex, what is that, a funnel, appeared where it was pointed, and the funnel got bigger and bigger, and it went down into the ocean, and on the base of the tunnel as it went down, you know, like a spinning,
whirlpool.
Anyway, there were,
A whirlpool?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
There were faces in the water sticking out along the edge of that whirlpool, women's faces. And that scared them all to pieces. He didn't know what to do with it. But he wasn't about to throw it in, and he didn't want anything to do with it. So what do you do with it? Well, they took it home, and he literally stood it outside one of his outbuildings for 5 full years. He walked around it. He wasn't going to cut that dang thing for love of money. But in a year, the last year, 4 years later, on the 5th year, he started having dreams about this dang stick. And it just was bothering the daylight out of it. The stick was, in a sense, haunting him. And so he started asking around his people. Nobody knew anything, even their elders. And word got out and got out and got out until finally somebody said, you know, there's a man that might be able to help you. He's in America. And they gave him my phone number. And he called me. He could speak English. He speaks only some kind of, I don't know, French mix. But he had an interpreter there. And he told me about this. And he said, I would like to tell you what the stick is looking, you know, looks like. I never heard of such a thing in my life. But I said, no, let me tell you, because the Creator started showing me all this stuff on this staff. I said, first off, it's 5 foot exactly. Yes, yes. I said, second off, it's got an ear carved on it, an eye carved on it, triangles carved on it, 7, if I remember correctly, and other little things like stairways. Yes, yes, yes. See, I'm telling them all about it. I've never even heard of the dang thing. But the Creator knows everything, and I know the inner Hiokas, that's our job, trying to keep right so the Creator can reveal knowledge to us for the help of all. But anyway, one thing led to another, and it turned in. Then the Creator took me into a time travel to show me where it originated from. And it was before the last earthquake. A woman society, holy women, had gone to a very holy medicine man and told them what they needed and asked if he would cut and peel the stick and then give it to them in the proper manner. And he agreed, and he did. And that's all his role was as a man. He cut the stick, went through much prayer, trying to find out what stick, what piece of wood, what tree, the whole bit. And then peeled it and then handed it over to the lady, and his job was done. And hold up. I love my cigarettes. But nevertheless, not a hint, folks. But anyway, the women carved all the carvings on it, and as they were carving it, they put their knowledge into it. Now that's something that any human being can do. Energize a stone, a stick, or whatnot, with what you want that memory to be. And another one of good and proper mind can hold that stick or stone or whatever and read the mail sent to them. And it's like a computer that no white man can get a hold of. And very dang few Indians. But, you know, they filled it with all the knowledge that they wanted that stamp to have. And then they hid it in one of the caves in the inner earth for the right time. Well, the right time came, it popped to the surface, unwaterlogged, painted too, by the way. And not a white man's paint either. And eventually found its way to the shore and this man and woman. Well, this man is now the caretaker of the staff. That's all he does is make sure that staff is safe. And he beds it down with blankets and pillows. It's a woman. But it's a woman's staff. It's truly a stick, but it has all the spirits of all the women. And this staff will be used to help the women of the world. It is not a staff for Indians only. It is for all women, all over, no matter your color or religion or whatnot. And it will be, at the soonest, it will probably be no later than late summer of this year. It could be, that's at the soonest that it will happen. Or next year. I don't think it will be 3 years from now. But there will be a ceremony, and it appears, from what I've been shown, that it will be on the Pacific coast, somewhere around Vancouver, British Columbia. Many women from all over our planet will come to this great event, and many women are men. Now, each will, almost all, will believe that they are the ones that are to be involved doing this fasting. But only 13 will be chosen, and they are chosen by their staff itself. There's a certain ceremony. First, a man will be chosen before any women. And this man's job, I'm being told not to tell at this time here. But nevertheless, every man will present himself to the staff. And it's as if you were laying on your back and you put your knees to your chest with your feet aimed towards, you know, towards the beach, and kick somebody in the butt if you didn't want them near you, with both feet on the cheeks, and kick them out of the circle that the staff is in. No, you are not the one. And this goes on and on and on until the right one is there. And then that one, that man, is accepted. That man's job is to introduce all the women who feel that they are the ones that will be chosen to do this work. And I don't know how many women, hundreds, I assume. I mean, gobs of women. There were gobs of men. And they will be introduced by the man. They will walk towards this backwards, towards the staff. And, you know, the staff sees the heart, knows the truth, and bang, kicks them in the butt with both feet, in that sense. And literally, they're propelled out of the circle until the 13 are found. Now, there's going to be a lot of picked off people, men and women. Pride hurts. You know, well, I should be chosen. Well, it knows their heart, knows pride is there. This is only the humblest. The ones that think little of themselves but love God, that will be chosen. And out of these masses of men and women, only 13 will be chosen. Out of the 13, 7 will do the major work. And the others will stand around the circle praying, lending their support for the 7. Then the staff will be pointed towards the ocean. That vortex, that whirlpool, will open up. The 7 women, and I'm sure in much fair interpretation, will walk into the ocean to the edge of that whirlpool, and stairs will appear. And they will walk down below the water level, down below the surface. When the last one goes down those stairs and the head is below the surface, the water closes over their head. Meanwhile, prior to this, a great bonfire started. This bonfire must continue to be fed until those women come out. Whether it's an hour or 5 months, it must be fed. No matter how long they'll be there. But they're not drowned. They walk into a total different dimensional field. And if the fire goes out, they'll never come back up. But people will drift away, but hopefully many will stay to help feed the fire. And when the time comes, all of a sudden the whirlpool on its own without a staff, to my knowledge, doing the pointing, it could be that the staff stands up and pulls by itself. The whirlpool will open and these seven women will emerge with all the knowledge that the elders before the earth lived wanted them to know for all the women of our planet. All the women. There is no segregation here. Now, out of those 13, at least one woman is a pure white woman. There might be an African or a black. I don't know. But it isn't all Indians that go in there. So I want the people that are your listeners to know that this ceremony will be. I don't know when. I know it will be, and it appears it's going to have to be at the very most 3 years away, but more likely 2 years, maybe this coming year. And when exactly, I have no idea. But if your heart is right, if you're listening to what I'm saying, and by the way, what I'm telling, I want you, man and woman alike, listeners, you tell this to your circle, your group, your friends, your brothers, your sisters. Doesn't matter, men or women. Tell them what I said. Because the word must go out and tell them to say it to somebody too. It's got to go all over our planet. And those that feel that they are part of this, start saving your pennies and nickels and dimes and getting your passports and whatnot. Because you're going to have to pay your own way. That's it. And you come when the time is, and you know the time, just like in that movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. All these people started from mountains, didn't know why, but they had to get there. And this is what will happen to the people that are to come. And you'll come at his bidding. Don't come because Retta picks up a telephone and talks to a radio station and says, okay, it's time, come on over. No, no, no. I have no idea when the time is. But Dad does. And the time will be right. And if you are halfway right, you will know at that time. And you will come. And if you just hear this through mouth, rumors, maybe you know, word is filtered down to some poor woman out in the boonies in the jungle. You know, hardly ever seen a white man. And let alone drove in a car or hopped on a plane. But she will know she's got to go. She's got to go somewhere. That direction. And she will be saving her little whatever that she sells to make a little bit of money so that she can get there. The Creator will make it possible. But in His time, and all the world, man and woman, should hear what I am telling you now. So the ones that are to go there will go there, and the ones that are to be picked out of those that go are picked, and the knowledge is brought forth, and hopefully help all the women who are very important on our Mother Earth. Women have given up their rights. There is no balance. Man has pulled up his long johns and said, look at me, you know, bull crap. Give it up to the women too. Let's have balance. And you women of the new age, and you women of, what do they call it, woman's right movement? You're out of step. That pendulum swings both ways, and you're grabbing onto it and holding it against your side of the wall. Balance is needed. Man and woman together. Brother and sister together. No, I'm the big wig. Man or woman. None of that. He is the big wig. One top side. Papa. So, know that this exists. Know that the staff is there. Know also that when the staff is brought out and shown, women that go to this camp are cured of unbelievable disease. I've seen it myself. I've been there. And it's just unbelievable. But right now, she's in birth, into birth mode. She doesn't want to be showing off. So don't go wiring right up. Where in the heck is it? I got to get cured of this and that. No, go ahead and die. Don't worry about it. I ain't going to tell you. Not right now, she wants to rest. Like any pregnant woman getting ready to give birth, she doesn't want to be dragged out of the house. She just wants to lay there and be miserable. Well, let her be miserable. Give her a chance. If there's a woman like thing. And so, I mean, there's that way to get healed except to run some damn magic staff.
Well, I know you shared some of that story in the past, but this is the first we've heard of the staff.
Hmm?
You shared the story about the ceremony at the ocean, but this is the first we've heard of the staff.
Oh, well, if I shared about the ceremony at the ocean, certainly I had to share somewhat of the staff.
No, this is actually the first time you told me about the staff.
Hmm. Oh, you mean I shared with you personally?
Yeah, you told me about
the... About an ocean ceremony?
13 women, yes, you did tell me about...
Maybe. Yeah, but not on the air, but between you and me.
Yeah, between you and me.
Okay, yeah.
But not about the staff till now. Wow, that's right.
Quite a staff. I have certain objects right here in my house that are extremely powerful sacred objects. Extremely. And I have one set of objects, possibly three, that will go if I am to go to this ceremony. I feel that if I am to go, these things will go too. And things that only two medicine people on earth have. I have the smallest of one of these two things. And I have two other separate objects as well. And, the white world at large has no idea, none at large in general, of what the Indian people are hiding and know about. On my website, you can fly. I teach how to do it. And by golly, I got the Bible to back me up. You can talk to a tree. I got the Bible to back me up. And the tree will respond. I got the Bible to back me up. You can become invisible. I have God's word to back me up. And I teach how. And the Indians get mad because I'm telling all the sacred stuff. Shoot, it's in a book that's over 2,000 years old. Go and find out how yourself. You don't have to buy a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, anyway. And that scared them all to pieces. He didn't know what to do with it. But he wasn't about to throw it in, and he didn't want anything to do with it. So what do you do with it? Well, they took it home, and he literally stood it outside one of his outbuildings for 5 full years. He walked around it. He wasn't going to set that dang thing for love of money. But in the last year, 4 years later, on the fifth year, he started having dreams about this dang stick. And it was bothering the daylights out. The stick was, in a sense, haunting him. And so he started asking around his people. Nobody knew anything, even their elders. And word got out until finally somebody said, you know, there's a man that might be able to help you. He's in America. And they gave him my phone number. And he called me. He could speak English. He speaks only some kind of, I don't know, French mix.
Uh-huh.
But he had an interpreter there. And he told me about this. And he says, I would like to tell you what the stick is looking, you know, looks like. I never heard of such a thing in my life. But I said, no, let me tell you, because the Creator started showing me all the stuff about this staff. I said, first off, it's 5 foot exactly. Yes, yes. I said, second off, it's got an ear carved on it, an eye carved on it, triangles carved on it, 7, if I remember. And other little things, like stairways and stuff. Yes, yes, yes. See, I'm telling them all about it. I've never even heard of the dang thing. But the Creator knows everything, and I know the inner Hiokas, that's our job, trying to keep right so the Creator can reveal knowledge to us for the help of all. But anyway, one thing led to another, and it turned in. Then the Creator took me into a time travel to show me where it originated from. And it was before the last earthquake. A woman society, holy women, had gone to a very holy medicine man and told them what they needed and asked if he would cut and peel the stick and then give it to them in the proper manner. And he agreed, and he did. And that's all his role was as a man. He cut the stick, went through much prayer, trying to find out what stick, what piece of wood, what tree, the whole bit. And then peeled it, and then handed it over to the lady, and his job was done. And hold on. I love my cigarettes. I'm only out. But, nevertheless, not a hint, folks. I hate that, just one statement. But, anyway, the women carved all the carvings on it. And as they were carving it, they put their knowledge into it. Now, that's something that any human being can do. Energize a stone, a stick, or whatnot, with what you want that memory to be. And another one, a good and proper mind, can hold that stick or stone or whatever, and read the mail sent to them. And it's like a computer that no white man can get a hold of, and very dang few Indians. But, you know, they filled it with all the knowledge that they wanted that staff to have. And then they hid it in one of the caves in the inner earth for the right time. Well, the right time came, it popped to the surface, unwaterlogged, painted too, by the way. And not a white man's paint either. And eventually found its way to the shore and this man and woman. Well, this man is now the caretaker of the staff. That's all he does, is make sure that staff is safe. And he beds it down with blankets and pillows. It's a woman. But it's a woman's staff. It's truly a stick, but it has all the spirits of all the women. And this staff will be used to help the women of the world. It is not a staff for Indians only. It is for all women, all over, no matter your color or religion or whatnot. And it will be, at the soonest, it will probably be no later than late summer of this year. It could be, I mean, that's as soon as it will happen. Or next year. I don't think it will be 3 years from now. But there will be a ceremony, and it appears, from what I've been told, that it will be on the Pacific coast, somewhere around Vancouver, British Columbia. Many women from all over our planet will come to this great event, and many women are men. Now, each will, almost all, will believe that they are the ones that are to be involved doing this fasting. But only 13 will be chosen, and they are chosen by the staff itself. There's a certain ceremony. First, a man will be chosen before any women. And this man's job, I'm being told not to tell at this time here. But nevertheless, every man will present himself to this staff. And it's as if you were laid on your back and you put your knees to your chest with your feet aimed towards, you know, towards your feet. And kick somebody in the butt if you didn't want them near you, with both feet on the cheeks. And kick them out of the circle that the staff is in. No, you are not the one. And this goes on and on and on until the right one is there. And then that one, that man, is accepted. That man's job is to introduce all the women who feel that they are the ones that will be chosen to do this work. And I don't know how many women, hundreds I assume. I mean, gobs of women. There were gobs of men. And they will be introduced by